This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today our special guest is Caitlin Glover. Caitlin's with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Natural Resources, and the Public Lands Council. We'll hear from Caitlin Glover in just a moment. Megan Schweitzer's an economist at USDA with a look at what the latest Consumer Price Index has to say about food prices.
So in July 2023, prices for all food rose by 0.3% and were 4.9% higher than July 2022. Prices for food at home rose 0.4% in July 2023 and were 3.6% higher than July 2022. And prices for food away from home rose 0.2% in July 2023 and were 7.1% higher than the prior year.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Caitlin Glover. Caitlin is Executive Director for the Public Lands Council and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Natural Resources. She's in Washington, D.C. Caitlin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Tony.
First things, we just look at the headlines and we see something that that the administration has done here in the last few days, and flanked with members of the administration as President Biden was in Arizona. Why is that of concern or interest for those who deal with public lands and landowners and cattlemen?
Well, you know, as someone who lives in and around Washington, D.C., you know, normally we make the joke that it's always nice to get out of Washington and into the real world. But unfortunately, the president's trip and many other officials from the Department of the Interior and USDA, their trip to Arizona this last week, unfortunately, didn't contain a lot of good news for cattle producers, for public lands grazers, and the local community. While he was there, the president used the Antiquities Act to designate a new national monument just adjacent to that Grand Canyon area, which is also a national monument. And in doing so, locked up about 1 million additional acres of land, lands that have been used for grazing, lands that have been in multiple use for decades, if not generations. And he did this, I mean, when you use the Antiquities Act, you change these landscapes with a single stroke of a pen. He doesn't need the approval of Congress. He doesn't need really even to consult with local communities. And unfortunately, the president didn't do any of that work, didn't have the support of local communities, didn't have the support of state government, but went ahead with these changes anyway. So what we're going to see, Tony, is yet another monument, landscapes changed in name only, that the president gets to tout some sort of big conservation or preservation win. But the landscape, the community, the industry, certainly grazing community, will continue to suffer because it, using the Antiquities Act is unfortunately, it has become over time really just sort of a cheap political tool. So we're not super pleased that the president took this action in Arizona earlier this week, and it continues the need to have some common sense interjected into the Antiquities Act into the future.
Caitlin, it's one of those, though, that it sounds good. When you hear the speeches and you read the reasons why, it all sounds good. But what big changes do we see here? Do we see the grazing rights disappear? Do we see more government control, and i.e. the potential for more wildfires, et cetera?
That's exactly it, right? When you don't have community support and that involvement, a lot of these management considerations get missed. A monument designation is necessarily more restrictive than other designations, which is why it's a favorite tool of administrations. This president has already designated national monuments in excess of 5 million acres during his presidency, and that's a lot of land to lock up. With the designation of the monument, management doesn't necessarily change right away. You still have to go through a planning exercise. You still have to go through NEPA, environmental analysis. And so the administration can say, look, designating a monument doesn't do anything, but it only brings positive benefits. But we've seen with other monuments repeatedly. The most recent, of course, is the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument in Utah, that when you go through this monument planning exercise, the tendency, the expectation of these agencies is that they remove grazing, they remove mining potential, they remove recreation potential, they remove all of the multiple use aspects from these landscapes that made these landscapes so special and so valuable in the first place in a lot of cases. So it is a really easy way for the president, any president, to say that they've done something, but the consequences for these communities are real, they're lasting, and they can be devastating. Sounds great on paper, not so great in implementation.
Obviously, this is a front burner issue for you, but if you were to also look on what's on the stovetop right now, what are a couple of what are three other pans that might be boiling that you're watching right now?
Oh, gosh. Well, I need a bigger stove, Tony, or maybe just more houses with more stoves, because we have a lot of irons in the fire right now, a lot of pots boiling. The administration has also recently released new guidance on NEPA that I mentioned before, that National Environmental Policy Act. Congress talked a lot about things in this NEPA space, wanting to make federal administration of environmental analysis easier, faster, and more efficient, you know, not holding up the roads and the bridges and even the water troughs and water pipelines, right, that we find across the West. And so CEQ, the White House Council on Environmental Quality, released new regulations following mostly what Congress told them to do, but adding their own spin and their own flavor. Unfortunately, it's that own spin and own flavor that's really going to undercut the positive wins that the House majority and the president negotiated. And so that's a real top burner issue for us at the moment before we end up submitting comments at the end of September. A lot of other things in the regulatory space, Tony, I mean, whether it's the three ESA rules, or whether it's how the government calculates the benefits of grazing through things called ecosystem services, or even Congress's attention to how to fund the government before the September 30th deadline. There's plenty of work to be done over the next several weeks while Congress is home in their state work period. They may be in their states or their districts, respectively, but the work certainly continues in Washington.
Talked about a lot of challenges here, but are there some good things happening in the space you're watching right now, whether it's through the legislative or federal side or just Mother Nature?
There are, Tony, and you know, often we do talk a lot about challenges because one of the things that PLC maintains is that we are sort of the safeguard, right? We want to be the first to sound the alarm when things, good or bad, are coming out of Washington. I am pleased to say, though, that we have seen some positive trends in one specific area this year, and that's in wildfire. On Friday, August 11th, we have a grazing permittee in California testifying in a House field hearing. I'm talking about wildfire, the wildfire crisis, and you know, sort of what we do about it, right? When we talk about fire, usually it's that, you know, ranches are being burned up and that the risk is going to continue as we go into August and September. But the good news is this year that a lot of places have gotten really good precipitation through the spring and summer, and we've seen some additional grazing opportunities to remove those additional grasses so they don't become fuels. And so the hearing on Friday is really going to be, I think, a little bit of an outlier. We can talk about how we use this low fire year to really build on and capture an opportunity to make some real progress in fuels management and protecting homes and barns and pastures and mountains and special places in a way where it's, you know, not a year where we're hitting every panic button as we're trying to quite literally put fires out. It certainly has been an unexpected, but a bright spot for a lot of producers this year.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground, and again, you touched on how the PLC is really set up to sound the alarm before the strikes actually occur, but. How do people get involved? How do producers, those who are interested, get involved with either Public Lands Council or what you're doing on the natural resources side?
So this is a great question. I think the first piece of advice I give is start close to home. Your local cattle or sheep organizations definitely are looking for leaders like your listeners. Your state level as well. If you want to engage directly with us at the Public Lands Council or the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, visit our website. Get in contact with us. Start being involved with our policy committees as well, because it takes leaders from all across this country to develop those diverse and productive perspectives that shape the future of the grazing industry. The Public Lands Council can be found at publiclandscouncil.org. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association, it's policy.ncba.org. And if folks are so inclined to travel maybe a little bit north for most of your listeners, they can join us at the PLC annual meeting in Pendleton, Oregon, at the beginning of September, the 5th through the 7th, and talk about a lot of these issues, whether it's animal disease management, federal lands grazing, wildfire, or even wildlife. Would love to see them there.
And with about 20 seconds left, for those who don't think they're impacted by federal lands, is it important for them as well?
Without question, Tony. You know, whether you're talking about food security, energy security, or even just the hunting or the hiking that you like to do, federal lands are at the center of what this country does and sometimes what it does best. Your involvement, your investment can make all the difference in the world, whether you live in Connecticut or you live in California.
Caitlin Glover is Executive Director for the Public Lands Council and NCBA's Natural Resources in Washington, D.C. on today's Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Caitlin Glover with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and the Public Lands Council.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with the Public Lands Council online, publiclandscouncil.org.
American agriculture creates millions of jobs, all the while feeding and clothing the world. But with many policymakers so removed from the farm, attacks on farm policy threaten our livelihood and quality of life in rural America. Our strength is our willingness to work together for the benefit of all. That's why business and farm leaders have formed the Southwest Council of Agribusiness to defend the bedrock of our economy and our way of life. This is Larry Combest. The Southwest Council of Agribusiness is at southwest-council.com.
At Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, our mission is to ensure the long-term profitability of our grower owners through value-added marketing programs and through services to their gins. As a true cooperative, we pay dividends back to our grower owners to financially strengthen their farming operations, whether in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or New Mexico. Rest assured, at PCCA, we make money for you, not from you.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Certainly in modern times, this is by far and away the worst Hawaiian wildfire disaster we have seen.
With USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey noting the West Maui wildfire in particular, which destroyed the historic community of Lahaina and led to dozens of fatalities. One of several fires and hotspots on the islands of Maui and the Big Island of Hawaii that remain as of Thursday.
Nobody really saw this Hawaiian situation coming. I think looking in retrospect, you can kind of go back and figure out some of the causes of all this.
Contributors to the fires include lingering chronic drought conditions on Maui, invasive grasses growing after a wet season and more prone to burning, and the combination of a high pressure system and Category 4 Hurricane Dora in the South Pacific, creating higher winds through the Hawaiian island chain.
We don't know yet the cause of any of these fires. Whatever the case, the fire started from a spark, rapidly spread in those winds.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.